I hear the music, and it's time to start another edition of Wheel Travel, the podcast. This is podcast 17B, as in boy. And we ditched 17A because it was horrible. And hopefully we can redo some of the content, but we've got to move forward. It was really just that bad. We've got a great show lined out for you. We'll have a special guest in-house. And other than that, what is going on, Josh Cobb? You have your own little intro, lead-in music. Nice.
My bad.
What was that?
If you scroll all the way down on the bottom of the Best in the Desert page, it plays a video.
Yes, it does. It's Steve Oligus, right? Yeah, I think so. That's cool. What's up, man? We haven't talked since Parker.
Our last fight.
Since our last fight, exactly. Oh, thank you, Mrs. Cobb. Hors d'oeuvres. That is very nice.
Hey, would you look at that?
You like those things, huh? All right. So anyway, so let's talk a little bit of off-road. Let's talk about your Parker experience. How was it? We had a ton of great racing going on in the first class of the day, the second class of the day. We had some surprises. We had some upsets. It was an event of sorrow, an event of happiness. How was it for you?
I was leaning towards the sorrow side.
You leaned on the sorrow side?
Yeah.
Was it better than Parker 2017?
Much better than Parker 2017. So would, you know...
What happened in 2018?
Sticking pins in your eyes. That would be better than Parker 2017. For those of you that don't know, 2017, we sheared the studs off the truck, and oddly enough, do you know who was in the truck with me when that happened?
Trevor?
Yes.
And? What does that mean?
This year, in 2018...
Who was in the truck with you when...
When all hell broke loose?
Mm-hmm.
Trevor.
Huh. Well, I see you as being the common factor.
Yes. Yeah, we had steering problems on steering problems on steering problems on stuck problems.
I would like to talk to you about going 75 miles an hour with a zip tied in steering servo.
Whoa. I did not go 75 miles an hour. I did 73.8.
73.8,
yeah.
With a servo that was zip tied into the truck.
Yes.
And as your father, I don't like that. As your team manager, that's awesome. But
look, I was trying to make up some positions, trying to pass some trophy trucks.
Yep.
And I knew the only way to do that was just to go full send. We're just going to send it.
And you did.
Yeah.
So you ended up what? What was your day like?
We ended up sixth.
Yep.
Just had a great start, though. Fantastic start. A lot of guys don't like the dust.
Yep, no doubt.
Joshy likes the dust.
Very cool.
I don't mind it. Now, Pahrump, that's different. That's a brick wall of dirt. But no, dust doesn't really bother me. But excited for the Mint. Ended up sixth at Parker.
We had 17 trucks, and you ended up sixth. That's not a bad day.
No, it's not a bad day, but. After, you know, going from a second in the championship to a third in the championship, this is not how I really wanted to start the season.
So, our results for Parker, we know that Ryan Winter won.
Yes.
We know that Greg Bragg got second. We know that Corey Winter, yes, that sounds a lot like the first place guy because it's his brother and the same team. And they got third, so a... Almost sweep the podium. If they had another truck, it would have been tough. You had Craig Spitz in fourth. Craig Spitz lost the lead on the third lap. He had a 10-minute lead, and not more than that.
He had led all day long.
Yep.
And it looked like it was his for the taking. Nothing was going to stop him. And he had what I would consider a flawless day for a desert racing. He blew a brake line. That's what happened. He hit a rock, and it tore the brake line off.
Yep, exactly. So that was a bummer. Mark Lewis, Which is the, of course, John Ferrari guys, right?
Mm.
Isn't that who that is? Oh, no, I'm sorry. I was looking down on the list. Sorry. Good, because I didn't recognize that name. So in fifth place, we had Kyle, right? And then we had you in sixth, or did we have Slavic? You might have gotten seventh, buddy.
I got... Okay, so here we go. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5,
you know,
6, 7.
So you got seventh place. Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. Ouch.
Yeah.
So you were part of the group that checked out early, mm-hmm, and came back. Tried to put on a charge at lap 3. Alex drove the truck. Alex did a nice job. How you got his first drive in a race that was scheduled.
Yes. Yes.
His first drive was when you went ass over tea kettle. And
well, this one wasn't even, I wouldn't call it scheduled. I mean, I was supposed to stay in.
Yep.
But he did know that if anything were to happen, he was getting in the truck.
And he did.
Mm-hmm.
So then... you know, the big surprise of the weekend was Doug Fortin winning Class 10. And as if that wasn't a surprise, then he beat Hedger straight up. And then he beat him in a car that's 15 years old, which was pretty damn cool.
I don't know about that because we...
You don't know if the car's old?
No. I don't know if he beat him straight up because we passed. We passed Brock on course. I don't know if there was a second Method car, but we passed a Method Class 10 car on course, and they were on the side. I believe it was in a pit. I don't know which pit it was, though.
Okay.
But anyway, I don't know. From what I remember, it was him, but I could be wrong.
Pretty distinct car. You would have...
Yeah.
Felt like it was another car if that wasn't it. But
and funny thing is I learned that Brock Heeger, what's the biggest and probably, I think, like one of the only sponsors on that car.
Method.
Right. He's an Ultra Kid.
Well.
Not anymore.
Not anymore. I think that has changed.
Nope. That all.
So in short course, he was Ultra. In desert, he was Method, right? Isn't that kind of what the deal was? He got asked to drive that car?
Yeah, because that car isn't his. So, and the guy that owned it was buddies with the Method guys.
Okay. So, now my understanding is that finally they have said, okay, enough is enough. You got to make a choice, right? And so, he went the other way while we went to Ultra from Method, which is
right.
Funny. And you want to talk about an absolute... heroic effort from the Ultra Wheels guys. So let me give you a little feedback on what happened with Trophy Light and Ultra Wheels. So, you know, I have nothing bad at all to say about the Method guys, except for the fact that we reached out to those guys starting at the Off-Road Expo in October, and we all decided that we wanted to do business together, but I couldn't get any response. And I would text my buddy Jaime, and it would, I would get nothing. I would text him nothing. But then I would text him, hey, buddy, thinking about you. Happy Thanksgiving. And then
in July.
Would get, it was a little weird that it was in July, but he responded right away. And then we'd go a little bit longer, and I'd say, hey, Vinny, stop. And then I would say, you know, hey, buddy, Merry Christmas. And then he would reply, hey, how are you? You know, Merry Christmas to you and the family. Tell Josh. He says, hi, that kind of thing. And then Big Rich, I'm sorry, we don't have a green room, so you'll have to just sidle on in. So special guest, as we promised, Big Rich is in the house. You're just going to have to listen to us clamor on for at least 45 minutes to an hour before we're ready to have you.
That's so. Fine.
Chime in whenever you want. So anyway, so... we had a hard time getting hold of those guys. As it turned out, you know, they owned up to it. We owned up to it. We had a problem with some email that didn't get through. And the fact of the matter is we had to move forward. The Ultra guys said, look, we want to do business with you. How do we get involved? What can we do? And I said, well, I'm incredibly loyal to the sponsors that we have. Give me some time. Let me talk with those guys and make sure they're still on board. And if not, hey, ladies, calm down. Anyway, sorry about that. I had to show them my strong pimp hand. And so
you're gonna get in trouble.
So we, Chris and JC and Jimmy and everybody at Ultra said, look, we really want to do this. What's it going to take? I put a little bit more pressure on Method, and as it turns out, we just ran out of time to put something together, and we made the switch over to Ultra. Now, where the Herculean effort comes in is that so now we are, where were we at, Josh, 3 weeks before Parker? And we decide to make a switch with our wheel company?
I don't know. It felt like Parker was like the next day.
The next day, but it wasn't. So anyway, we decide to do this. So I drive over to Ultra. In the meantime, they're trying to find the wheel that they want us to race on. They find a wheel, and lo and behold, a 5 on 4.5 does not exist in a B-lock in the Ultra catalog as far as the wheel that they want us to use. So this wheel doesn't even exist, right? And so Chris puts on this amazing charge, and he takes a wheel with that's a blank, and he turns it into the official trophy light wheel. Absolutely unbelievable. So I roll over there. He does that in a day or two. I roll over there, and I grab 50 wheels, and I head back home to start mounting them and check everything out. Now, I had a show in Mexico, so I got here on Wednesday, and on Wednesday night, we put tires and wheels on one of our trophy lights, took pictures of it so we would have something, sent it to those guys and the Yokohama guys, and then we loaded up and I went to Mexico for that show, right?
Right.
And then you went to California to pick up parts from somewhere.
Yeah, what was I doing over there? That was trip number one.
Trip number two of three or four.
Yeah, so I think wheels...
You got to talk that way.
I think wheels.
So we did more wheels. We did. You were dropping off parts.
Did I go
I know
to Curry?
That. Curry.
Oh, you know what? You know what? Nope. Never mind. Wrong trip. Anywho, go ahead.
So, anyway, so we come back. We mount the wheels. We start distributing and shipping wheels, and I get a call from Greg Bragg. Greg Bragg says, "Hey, buddy, we got a problem. These wheels don't clear the brake caliper." I said, "What are you talking about?" I go, I have them on a truck right now, and they clear fine. So I call Jeff Knupp. Jeff Knupp says, hey, I got them mounted right here. I don't see a problem. Let me try them on this other truck. Lo and behold, the new style caliper and the new style upright and the new style wasn't compatible with the wheel. So we had already shipped out 24 wheels. We had already had Jason Crabtree pick up wheels and tires. We had already all the wheels were in motion. All the tires were in motion. And... So now what do? So we call Chris. Jeff gets on the phone with Chris. They discuss what the plan is. They say, okay, we're going to machine down a bunch of wheels. They drop ship wheels without getting wheels back. They ship them over to us. You run over and pick up wheels at that point. And so we've gone through about 100 wheels at this point, and we have some wheels that need to go back and get redone. But lo and behold, we made it to Parker with just, like I said, an unbelievable effort from Yokohama, from Ultra, the guys at Factory Canopies. We decided we couldn't put together our sponsorship program until we knew everybody on there. And Factory Canopies wasn't on. They weren't able to build our stuff until we knew what was going on. They put stuff together at the last second. Our buddy Keith Hook came through with some Bitch and Josh Cobb shirts. At the last minute, and everybody did their job and came through, and it was a huge success, and I want to thank those guys. And then the performance was phenomenal. I mean, we had a couple of guys. Guys just don't like change. We understand that. But if you pulled everybody aside and said, okay, tell me what your day was like, then they all said, well, you know, now that I think about it, we're really, really happy. No dented wheels. We had fewer flats than we had last year, and the performance seems to be really, really good. So I'm going to have to take your driver guys' word for it because I haven't been on a set yet.
I think you should. It's they're I don't know how to explain it. They're different.
Yep.
But I don't know how.
But you like them.
I do. And what was really weird is lap one and two, those tires did two laps. And we, at the pit at lap two, or finishing lap two, going on to three, we did the tire change because we were replacing the servo. And the tires from lap three looked worse than the tires from
it went one and two.
One and two.
Well, I wonder if air pressure had anything to do with that. And I know that,
did we change air pressure?
No, but they had been sitting in the sun, for one. And when you started, it was 48 degrees.
Yeah, that's true.
Number two is you told me that you drove 60% on lap one.
Yeah.
And you drove, and Alex did not drive as hard as you drive because he's getting used to the truck. And on lap three, you said you pushed it.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that's probably your difference. Your lines and track is torn up. Yeah, absolutely. So the track had gone away times 600 cars. Well, no. At that point, there had only been probably another 200 cars over it, 100 cars over it twice.
Right.
And so, and then the lap three guys, so 300 cars had been in front of you over it since the first time you went through it on lap one. So
pretty
amazing. Just everybody pulled together. All the Trophy Light guys were fantastic. A hell of a show in Class 10.
Heck of a Trophy Light race. I mean, we went through four different lead changes.
Yeah, four or five different lead changes. And I think the thing that's amazing is the guy that got second place was such a non-factor on lap one and two. And
he came out of nowhere.
Yeah. Everybody was like, okay, well, we don't have to worry about Greg. We don't have to worry about this. We don't have to worry about that. Then all of a sudden, we disappear. Then all of a sudden, Craig disappears. And all of a sudden, Ryan's running away with it with Corey right on his butt. And then Corey takes the lead. Then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Greg Bragg says, hey, wait a second, fellas. I want to get in on this conversation. And not only does he get in on the conversation, but he moves into second and puts a charge on Ryan.
Yeah.
So absolutely unbelievable. How did our rookies do? Where's our first finishing rookie? Because I think
Corey Winter.
So the guy that got third was our first. Yeah. So in the rookie of the year deal, obviously they're having a great time. And Greg Bragg was our rookie of the year last year. So that's pretty cool. The other thing that I want to point out, how about the Class 10 guy that won it? Go up and look at the time on the Class 10 guy. He won it within, I think, 40 seconds of the first trophy truck. Or trick truck. Excuse me.
Excuse me,
Best in the Desert. Trick trucks. So, 7:06:47. And then give me the other race results.
7:06:47. 7:04:59.
So,
he lost by basically
a minute and a half.
Yeah.
A minute. Yeah. Holy cow. Now, understandable. So, everybody talks about the lights. Andy McMillan, if he turned on any lights, I'll be surprised. He finished right at dusk, I believe. Right? And if he did, he ran 30 minutes, 45 minutes at night.
Yeah.
If that. So, the first 10 car ran every bit of an hour at night.
Easy.
In the morning. Easily. So, that's a wash. And then on top of that, you have the fact everybody goes, oh, well, the course was so much easier. Yeah, I agree with that. However, the trick trucks had already started by the time the 10 cars were starting to finish. And those guys had a pretty easy run of it on the first lap or two. So, bottom line. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And getting up on top of things. And the first thing you hop in is that sand and, you know.
Horsepower.
Absolutely. So I absolutely blown away by the performance of the whole class. Top five Class 10 guys are really close.
I want to know what Fortin's top speed was.
That'd be interesting to know for sure. Andy McMillan wins overall. Brett Serapis second. Justin Matney. Go down, Josh, and show me the first 6100 guy. And the reason why I bring this up, something we were looking at, and Rich, I don't know, you have multiple classes that are qualifying at the same time, but one thing that I thought was really, really weird, I thought the number one qualifying 6100 truck would probably break the top 25 of trick trucks in qualifying. I just thought, and maybe the top 30, and how many qualified? 50, roughly, right?
Oh,
trick trucks?
Yeah. I think it was more than that. I think it was...
I think maybe with class ones it was more than that, but I think trick trucks themselves...
Yeah, it was probably 50, and then class one was probably like 30.
So the first 6,100 car would have qualified 50th.
Yeah.
In trick truck. And I actually thought the gap was much slower. Or closer, excuse me. I think that's great, because I think there does have to be a gap between the two classes. We don't want them so close. But I was really, really impressed with the fact that then on race day, 18th overall. So right. They came up, 40 spots from qualifying, or I'm sorry, 32.
But 18th gets them over an hour behind the leader.
Yeah.
So, I mean, huge.
So Andrew Whitehead and the Mason, and, good for those guys. Youth Fury finally gets a win in 6,100. Those guys worked hard. Bobby Pecoy, what was the gap there? So they won by 5 minutes. So not bad. And that's interesting. That's the best finish I've ever seen for a Brenthal that I can remember in a national caliber race.
Oh yeah.
So, yeah. But anyway, so that was our Parker. It was fantastic. Then we hauled ass home so we could watch Supercross at San Diego, or actually at that point it was Oakland, and it was an unbelievable mess. It was great. And then week goes by. I actually do fairly well in my fantasy deal, which I'm getting slaughtered on now. But then San Diego happens. So we lose Ken Roczen. We lose Eli Tomac, goes berserk and pulls a MIA. Did you think the hit on Roczen onto Webb was way out of line?
No. Quite honestly, any hit these days that is controversial...
I'm not talking about the end result.
No.
Talking about the act of.
I know. When I first like really started getting into Supercross, it was the Ricky Stewart and Reed era, and those guys just hammered on each other every corner. And I don't think that any of this today is anywhere close to being as aggressive as those guys.
Well, it was unfortunate the way it happened. I did think that Webb's pass was more aggressive,
don't think it was uncalled for.
No, I don't think it was uncalled for.
He just ran him up high in a corner. That's.
I agree. But those guys have beef, right? So Webb's dating Roczen's old girlfriend, and words have been said, and it's crazy. But it's been week after week. But I think Roczen. I think for someone that had a bigger plan and a bigger, he was sitting second in points. Mm-hmm. And although Jason Anderson had checked out a little bit, he was the only one that could really challenge him without having issue from Jason Anderson. And he was just starting to get his groove. He led Oakland all the way up to the end and lost it on the last lap. He had been struggling a little bit during the day, but anyway, I just thought it was a pretty irresponsible move on his part. So Jason Anderson has problems in qualifying. He actually goes after a lower ranked privateer rider and takes them both out during qualifying. Really? And this is a guy that's wearing the red plate and making all the right decisions. Then he goes in and he slams Muscan again. And Muscan tried. Did you see Muscan try to take out Anderson on the first couple of laps? It was such a pathetic takeout. It was a bad angle. It was bad drive. It was horribly executed. And it just goes to show you how nice Marvin Muscan is that he didn't even know how to do a takeout move.
Nice.
He's French.
Well, yeah.
Same thing, right?
Yeah, but he's scared.
That's it. There you go.
I mean, he doesn't want any part of Jason Anderson.
No, he don't want any part of anybody.
No.
So,
what do you think Roczen weighs?
Oh my gosh,
like a 110?
Nah, he's probably 140.
Oh, I don't.
I
bet he's under that.
And Anderson's got to be 175, whatever. But
Roczen or Muscan is like Pike's Breakfast.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. Anyway, there's a lot of stuff going on, but Jason Anderson is showing that he's not quite ready to be the champ. And what I mean by that is he's riding with unbelievable confidence. He's riding with unbelievable swagger, but he is making still Jason Anderson type decisions. And if he wants, all I remember is guys start to separate themselves from the field and they start to ride, you know, smart. They start to stay out of the mess. They start to not take some chances and save the chances for when they have to later on when it gets closer. How about Cole Seeley checking out on the field and leading the first 16 laps of 22, and then Anderson, just like he used to do in the 250s, runs him down. And Cole Seeley, I felt so bad for him, and not because he had no reply. I mean, he had, hey, Vinny, let's not do that, buddy. He had no answer for him and didn't even try.
Why do you feel bad for him,
though? Because, I mean, to me, that's the sign of a guy that's never going to accomplish his goals just based off of his personality.
His fault. Don't feel bad for him.
Well, I do. You don't put in all the work and then realize that you're one tool short of building something amazing. You know,
no. He's incredible. He's not one tool. He's missing a drawer. Okay.
I don't know about that. Cole Seeley's much closer than a drawer, and he's riding extremely well. And the past few weeks have been phenomenal. But as soon as he gets heat, he fades. And you could tell it got into his head because then it was a freight train going by. Moose Gang got by him. Baggett got by him. And it was ugly. And I felt bad for him. And now he's Honda's sole hope. And will they move Christian Craig up onto the 450? I don't. He's got a great training program. And if he was out front by himself, he would have run consistent. He had the fastest lap times. You know, he was... Between him and Anderson and Muskan, they were all trading back and forth. He did make a couple of errors once he heard the crowd kind of get into it. But it's not endurance. It's mental. He's a head case. And I'm blown away with Alden Baker and all of these amazing trainers that are out there that we don't put more emphasis on the mental side of this whole thing. And I think that's where most of these guys, you know, how many times have we seen it where in any sport where a competitor comes up and he gets one little victory and that turns into two and that turns into three and all of a sudden you have a monster, right? And that in confidence is such an amazing thing. But I think that can be taught at some level, not all the way, but I think it can be taught. If you believe when you line up that you have a chance, things will happen. So I think Marvin Muskan believed in the second half of the moto. He didn't in the first. Go watch the race and concentrate on Marvin Muskan. He got pissed and said, enough is enough. I'm going to do this. And he went from being everybody's bitch to going all the way up to second place and actually was running lap times better than Anderson at the end, although Anderson could have been on cruise control.
But will that carry over into this weekend? Or do you think that... is that stays in the past and he's going to go back to his old ways?
I don't know. It depends on how mad he is, right?
Yeah, but he's French. I mean, he's a pussy.
Well, yeah, I get that and I agree with you. But I don't think the shenanigans are over. And by that, I mean, so Jason Anderson has said that he's not going to be on the practice track with Muskan because their KTM and Husky are together. Right, so now all of a sudden there's that beef going on, that friction, and then Anderson's dropped him three or four times in qualifying and in heat races and in main races.
We watched that happen in Phoenix. During qualifying.
Absolutely, and not a little tap.
No.
I mean, like, he cleaned his clock.
Intentionally going after him.
So,
and I think what's going to happen is Marvin is going to get fired up, and then he's going to go try and touch Anderson. And Anderson will say nay nay, and he's gonna put him on his ass pretty much, and Muskan is gonna go back to his old ways.
So where's Barcia in all this?
Barcia's out front. Barcia's cruising. He's having the ride of his life.
You're not seeing the same thing I'm seeing. I mean, you're seeing a guy that's fired up.
I'm seeing it, man.
I will tell you, I was the first guy to jump all over Barsha when he went from second to eighth last weekend.
Yes.
When he got passed, all of a sudden he went backwards. But then we learned that he actually lost his rear brake, and I think it happened in the Marvin Muscan, hey, I'm finally pissed off move.
Right.
And so I actually feel bad for not having any more faith in Barsha than I have, and I hope that he can rebound from this because he has been riding well. Second weekend in a row, Blake Baggett makes the podium. What do you make of that?
He's not going to do anything. Don't worry about him. He's a non-factor ever.
Wow. Are you a hater?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
I'm not. I like Baggett.
I know you
I'd
do,
like to see Brayton get it.
I can't like him.
Oh, because I do?
Yes.
Understood. It's nice that we were guests of Blake Baggett
Great guy. Fantastic guy. Great rider. I absolutely love him. Favorite rider on the track.
There you go.
On Tuesdays.
All right. So Supercross, if you haven't tuned in, honest to God, you guys need to get it on your DVR and watch it when you can. It is phenomenal.
This week is first East race.
Going to Dallas, first East race. I think it's funny that Houston is a West race and Dallas is an East race.
Wait, I thought they were in Arlington.
That's Dallas. Arlington, Texas is just outside of Dallas. It's like Glendale is to Phoenix.
I thought there was an Arlington, North Carolina.
There's also an Arlington, Virginia, and there's probably an Arlington, Arizona, but I don't know. Oh, they're in Dallas.
Hey, man, whatever.
Easy. So they'll be there this weekend. I actually saw the Cycle Trader, Rock River Cycle Trader, Yamaha.
They are they're looking for a driver.
Seriously?
Yes.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious. They're looking for a driver. No. No.
Come on, coach. Put me in. I can do that. Are they really?
Yes, they are.
Driving what? Semi?
Driving the
race. The team rig.
The team semi.
Oh, I'd drive the shit out of that. That'd be awesome. I'd get back in, but I'd have to talk to Bradley every once in a while. I wouldn't like that.
Oh.
So anyway, and then the 250 race happened. It was great. Go watch it. So anyway, so they're headed to Dallas this weekend, and it's going to be great. More fireworks. We're going to see the first East Coast guys. I have no idea who's racing East Coast. I'm happy to see a couple of the guys jump back in there that couldn't be. I know some guys got hurt right before the start of the West, so they switched some guys over at the last minute. But it's going to be exciting. Tune in. If you haven't been recording it, tune in. So from Supercross, we went to King of the Hammers. We went out to help Rollin McGee, and we did not make it to Chad's race. We had some stuff going on during the week with Trophy Light, and we did not make it to Hubert's race. And so we made it to Rollins. We showed up Thursday night. We slept in Rollins' trailer, and that was the coldest I've been in a long time. And it wasn't cold sleeping. It was cold when I would move and air would get into my sleeping bag.
Do you know when it was also cold? When you woke up at 5 or 6 or whatever ungodly time you woke up and decided to open the door.
You think it was colder outside than inside?
Yes.
No chance. Oh, for sure. It might have been warmer.
There's no way.
It was the same temperature.
No, it wasn't.
It was.
No, the trailer retains heat.
It retains nothing. It retained. No, it was. It was bad. Anyway.
Wait, question.
Yeah.
I gave you the bad sleeping bag. How was that sleeping bag? Was it still good? No, I want to know, man.
No wonder you were cold.
Ah, well. No, it was miserable. But it was fine. I was afraid of being cold, and I wasn't at all until, like I said, I would wake up and I had shifted and I didn't have any covers on me for a couple of minutes, and then you re-wake up and go, holy crap, why am I dying? And so it was good. It was good. I will say, and this is not ass kissing to our guest here, Rich Klein, but I have said this, and I hope Rich tells me that I'm out of line and wrong, but I don't think I am. That is the biggest shit show I've ever seen in my life. I've said it year after year after year. I am amazed, and I will give credit where credit is due. Dave has done an amazing job on the marketing side of that thing. He has done an amazing job. It is unbelievable to think that you can go up on the side of a mountain and there is a TV there showing you footage from what's happening on the other side of the course. I'm blown away. How we don't have that in desert racing, I'll never know. How we don't have that in Ayersburg, I'll never know. How we don't have that at all of these things. He has done a remarkable job. And the fact that he has built this thing up to where he owns the production studio, he owns the trailers, he owns the cameras, pretty amazed by that. However, that being said, it is the worst event in the world for our sport.
Yes.
So if you've never been to King of the Hammers, here's why I say this.
Hold on. First of all, before he gets into all the bad things about King of the Hammers, even if you're not a fan of desert racing or any racing of any sort, you need to go. Just once.
I agree.
Just go. Go, and you're going to love it after you're there. It's a lot like racing the Baja 1000. While you're in it, you're like, oh, God, get me out of here. This sucks, please. Oh, I just want to be done. And then, you know, a week, a day, a month later, you're telling stories to your buddies and your friends and your family, and you ended up having a pretty good time.
I always say, and I think I heard this on one of those, I think it was Cameron Steele, actually, that said, I thought Cameron did a great job with Ricky Johnson talking about, you know, he was the on-screen talent for KOH. I thought he did a phenomenal job, but I wish he'd do Supercross because the guys that do Supercross, Jeff Immig sucks. Sorry, I digress. The fact of the matter is that these guys have, it is an amazing show. And what these guys are doing, I don't want to take anything away from the athletes, the machines, the teams, the effort. I don't want to take anything away from this. It is absolutely amazing what these vehicles will do and what they're doing. And I'm blown away. The problem that I have with it is when you pull up, it is, there are people going everywhere. You're out in the Johnson Valley off-road area, and it is open for free riding, and there are trails everywhere. The problem is that there's also no rules, it seems like, for trail etiquette, and there needs to be rules for trail etiquette. There are people going anywhere and everywhere they want. It is, if you take Glamis and you inject it with 30 tons of Rockstar and then put that on crack, that's King of the Hammers. And that's, of course, Glamis on New Year's. And so you have 100,000 people out there. They all have something to drive, ride, roll, or crash, and they're going absolutely everywhere they want. Now, it's not sand, so it's dusty, and it's down in a bowl. It's a horrible mix. I actually struggled breathing. I sound like a puss. I'm starting to sound like Marvin Mooskin now, but you know, I actually found myself struggling a couple of times to get my breath. And it, when you look around and when you look out of it, when Josh and I were driving into it, we were like, holy crap, look at that mess down there. And then when you get down in it, of course, you don't really see it until the lights come on. When the lights come on, you're like, holy crap, it's 2 o'clock in the morning and we're breathing this stuff, you know? So then my issue with it is that if you look at it, I think if an environmentalist, and I don't want to give anybody any bad ideas here, but if an environmentalist were to walk in there with a camera, they could take 1,000 pictures in an hour of ways that we are not doing it right. And I put the responsibility on the off-roader. I put the responsibility on the guy that has, you know, the Kawasaki that he's got his helmet on and no boots and a chest protector, and he's going wide open across the lake bed through campsites, and he's got his 6-year-old kid behind him on a LT80 or a PW50, whatever it is. I put the responsibility on him. Dave can't do it all, but at the same time, when you guys bitch and moan about a best in the desert race, about how you can't bring pit bikes and you can't bring your dog and your kid can't ride his bicycle in the pits and stuff like that, well, remember, when we have a place to race in 10 years, or our, my kids' kids have a place to race in 20 years, maybe 30 years, I hope, then remember why we are and how we got to this point. The responsibility is on you idiots. You have to do a better job of policing yourself and the people that you're with. And God damn it, it's okay to judge. It's okay to tell somebody that they're doing it wrong. And guess what? If you're the jackass that's doing it wrong, it's okay to say, you know what, bud? You're right. Thanks for letting me know and go on with your day. Don't be a jackhole and push back, because all you're doing it is ruining it for everybody else. Okay, I'm off my soapbox. King of the Hammers was great. I had a good time. I was sorry that Roland didn't finish.
You ever want to know what living with him is like? So it's that for like 98% of the day, and then he gets off his soapbox for the other 2%.
Okay, I agree with you.
Well, hold on.
He's trying to teach you life lessons.
That's right.
You'll appreciate it when you're 30.
When you do a good job, do I not give you all the praise in the world?
Yes. Yes, you do.
Don't shake your head.
He won't appreciate it until he's 30. My son, same thing.
He won't make it to 30. I'm going to kill this kid.
It's not even he gets off his soapbox for the 2%. He goes on these rants all day long, and then he goes to bed. And then
do you think I like being like this?
Everything's quiet in this house, and it's so nice and peaceful.
And then I wake up,
and I find
the mess that you've made.
The mess that I've made.
Of my life. Oh, that's so untrue. Let's take that back. That's unfair. I'm not like that 98% of the time. And I am very supportive of you. I couldn't even say it straight.
95.
What are you eating? What is that?
Everything. We got mozzarella cheese balls.
Oh, is that what that is? What's the yellow thing on it?
Meatball. What yellow thing?
Isn't there... Oh, did you pull them off? On the mozzarella cheese balls things, there was yellow things.
Yeah, those are tomatoes.
Oh, no. Whoops.
Yeah, that's fine.
No wonder I didn't eat them.
Well, we got pears, and then we have a little piece of
bread with steak on it.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds good.
Havarte.
Melted cheese. What kind of cheese is it?
Havarte. Oh.
Rich is quite the...
connoisseur.
Yes, he...
Look at this
he holds
body. You think I got that by walking by food?
He holds his pinky out when he drinks. That's all I know. So...
That wasn't my pinky.
So, anyway, King of the Hammers, it really is a spectacle. I do think you should go. I do think you should reel it in a little bit. You should have fun with the family, but do it responsibly. And don't be afraid to call somebody out and say, hey, look, man, I want to do this for the rest of my life. Please get your shit together, because it is important, and we are going to lose staple events like this if we don't take responsibility. Congratulations to Jason Shearer. Jason and I, of course, got pretty close when I was at Safecraft. And top-notch guy. And, you know, probably technically won it last year, too. And we should be talking about four-peat with this guy. Instead, now we're talking three-peat, right, Rich? This is the third time he's won it. It's now him and Campbell that are the only two that have done three. I think so.
I don't know. I thought...
Because last year, before Campbell won it last year, there was a discussion about... They named off... There's only been seven winners of King of the Hammers, and that's because... Five winners?
5 winners in 10 years.
And three of them have done it twice. Right?
Yeah.
And now somebody else is... Or Campbell's done it three times, and now Shearer's done it three times.
Not Shearer. Yeah.
I don't know. We'll have to look that up. Too bad there's not a box.
Randy's done it twice. Eric's done it twice. Campbell's done it three times.
Josh, see how many wins Jason Shearer has at King of the Hammers.
Yeah. It's not my race. I keep forgetting.
Right. So,
Art, I remember who won my championship last year. Well, we do so many of them.
You do. You've got a handful, and we're going to get into that in a minute. So, will King of the Hammers, how many started that, do you think, Rich?
Too many.
And if you don't...
All, or just in the big race? The
just in the big race, yeah.
I think there was 140 or something like that.
And I know that 40 didn't finish.
No, not at all.
So, it's crazy. And I know that this year... Somebody last year commented that the course was easy, and so Dave Cole said, "All right, boys, I'll show you easy."
Well, there was very high finishing rates last year in all the classes, and one of the guys that is a past king after this race on social media said it was too easy. Even though he didn't finish the race, he was in contention for the lead, and then his car decided not to work anymore. But he said it was too easy, that all the trails were downhill. You know, he created some controversy, and then those post call got deleted, which was probably a good idea.
Yeah,
but he probably shouldn't have done them to begin with.
So. Not to put you on the hot seat or whatever. So does someone from King of the Hammers call him and say, "Hey, pull those down," or does one of his teammates say, "Hey, pull it down," or does he go?
No, I think
I screwed up.
I think he took so much heat that it was probably, you know, him and his buddies or family. You know, somebody said, you know, "Hey, you probably should rethink this." I don't think Hammer King Productions did it. But Ultra 4, but, you know, Dave is not unknown. Any promoter,
right.
You know, if something's getting out of control, I've called drivers and said, you know, really? You thought that was too easy? Maybe you did really well, but what about everybody else?
Right, sure.
You know, you won by 150 points.
Sure.
How was it easy for everybody else?
Right.
Yeah. So,
29 guys finished.
29 finished?
Yeah. Where would you like to see?
Our races are different.
I understand, but you, with this being the Baja 1000 of endurance rock crawling,
it is the event is portrayed as the most difficult one day off road race in the world.
Okay.
So to keep that, you have to have a high attrition rate.
Sure.
Guys that can't finish, and it's either by time or just that cars fail. If they had a 50 or 60% completion rate, like we like to see, then it would be, you know, it wouldn't be the most difficult race.
So there are races like Ayersburg and Last Man Standing and stuff like that where they, you know, the goal is we're talking 20 guys. We're talking, Ayersburg's different, but Last Man Standing, it's select. By invitation only type of things, made for TV, and we want it down to one guy, right? In a perfect world, they want one guy to slay the dragon, and that's it. They don't want 10 guys to whatever. Is this race, is King of the Hammer, ultimately, would he want one guy to finish? And I know you're speaking, I don't want you to speak for him, mind. Would that make the ultimate race?
It might. But you'd be really hard pressed to keep the numbers of entries the way it is.
So my thing with it is, all right, let's take Rollin McGee for example. Okay. Rollin has a very competitive car in your series. Okay.
Absolutely.
He absolutely adores running in your series, and he can run several different classes.
Series.
You know, he can
series within the series.
Right, exactly. He goes here and he gets done and he goes, "I never had a chance."
No. Yeah, absolutely. There's a reason that, and I keep saying this, there's a reason that there's only 5 guys that have won this race.
He's on 39s. He never had a chance. The way his car is built, way too low, he never had a chance. His budget, he never had a chance. His everything, not his determination, not his skill, not his heart. I have a problem with that, right? Now, understandably, that you have to have a vehicle that's made for this discipline. I get it, right? And I think that, but what, how many times will you have a guy come from Michigan over to try his hand at the Hammers when eventually, I mean, here's this young man that goes, "I won't go back because I don't have a car for it."
There's 80 or 90 guys that show up to this race every year, and their goal is to just finish. You have 3 people that come to the Hammers. Okay, you have the guys that that, well, you have four, okay, but there's three. There's three primary ones. You have a very select few that can win the race.
You got 10 guys that can win it.
You have five guys that can win it.
Really? That's it?
You have five guys that can win this race.
Okay.
That's my opinion. You have another 15, 10 to 15, that if something happens to those five, then that person, one of those people, you know, if lightning strikes the other five, then you're going to have a shakeup at the top.
Okay, so let's take this. So Jason Scheer, obviously one of the five. Eric Miller, one of the five. Waylon Campbell, one of the five. So
no, I'm talking about the five winners that have won this race.
Okay, so
Randy Slauson was on Jason's bumper less than 3 miles out to finish the race when his car failed. Jason passed him coming down back door.
Okay, so Josh Blyler,
good racer.
Okay, is he one of the five? No.
No.
Okay.
He's one of he's that next group of 15.
So Raul Gomez.
Lightning has to strike.
Okay, so he's one of the 15.
Right. He's fast. He's got the car. He's got the equipment. He's got the finances. It's just, you know, his package, even though he's a great racer, all the Gomez's are, they're not, they don't have the complete package that those other five have.
Shannon got six. We obviously know he's one of the five. Lauren Healy.
Correct. He's one of the five. There's your other winner of two events. Three
okay.
Events. This was Jason's second, I think.
So, I think your point is fairly well made. So the 4, 5, and 8, 9, 10, those are 11. Those are guys that have to have something happen. And of course, we know that Shannon Campbell had some problems early on. We know that, who did you just say?
Randy Slauson. Broke with like 2-3 miles out.
Yep. He had to go out for someone else to move up. I get your point. How long will people continue to do this at the level that they're doing it with no chance of ever winning it?
Because that next group wants the chance to be on the podium. That next group wants to be on the podium. They want that. They think that lightning will strike at some point for them so that they can win that race. The guys that come in and just want to finish, that's where you got the biggest part of your field are guys that just want to finish the race once. And if they can finish the race once, you may never see them race again.
Right.
You know, because they obtained their goals. Now, the argument always is it worth racing at that level just to say I finished the race?
How long
depends on the person.
Sure. How long until we see a 6100 type scenario where you have another class on the big day on Friday? So first of all, for those of you guys who don't know, King of the Hammers is a week long event. It starts with motorcycles, and then qualifying and UTVs and qualifying and Everyman Challenge and qualifying and the big race.
While we have Rock Genius over here,
no, not Rock Genius.
How hard is King of the Motos? Have you ever seen it? Have you ever?
Oh yeah, I've seen it and witnessed it. It's absolutely. I think the guys that run it are out of their mind. I'm a cage guy. You got to put a cage around me and four wheels. I've never been an off-road bike guy. I was a street bike guy when I was younger. I never felt comfortable on dirt. But then you get them on the rocks. I've done the Rubicon on a 500. And it was the most miserable day of my life being on that motorcycle in the rocks. I give huge amount of cred to any guy or girl that's ever competed in that race. I don't care if they finish it or not. Just having the sack to go out there and do it is, to me, absolutely insane. I mean, they're animals. That's all it is.
So Josh Cobb says he's doing it in 2019.
You know, it's one of those things that I know that it was extremely difficult this year. Jimmy Lewis, I consider him a really good friend, and he's a phenomenal rider, especially in conditions like out there. So he can set a track like that and ride it. You know, you almost think he could ride it face and backwards on the bike. but, you know, in a race, total race situation, when you have all those other racers on the rocks at the same time, you know, it creates a lot of stress, drama, you know, everything that a racer goes through in probably 2 years, they're gonna feel in that one race, or that two races put together, the night race and the day race. Anybody that finishes,
did you say a night race?
Yeah, the first Saturday night is the first part of the race, first half of the race, and then they turn around and do it again Sunday morning.
I didn't know that one.
Yeah, no. It is. Whoa. If you're gonna do it, you need to start training now. And I don't mean, you know, just doing what you're doing now. I mean you hit the pavement and start running cardio like crazy. Because you're not riding your bike half the time. Half the time you're on the throttle off the bike trying to push it up the rocks.
Right. Now I've gotten pretty good at that. I tend to have to do that a lot. Especially riding with Mike.
But he's right. I mean, you have to do that. Yeah, Mike Watson, what is his deal with rocks? He loves rocks.
He's mad at that bike or something.
Buddy of ours, well, you know Mike Watson. He threw that bike up the side of a cliff face day two of having that bike. And I've had mine for a year now, and I'm like, no, I'll walk it through this. I want to keep the rims round and the anodized orange stuff, orange and all that stuff. It's crazy. He uses his bike for its intention, and I don't. I just want to look good, so because I'm not fast anymore. But so how long until we see a 6100 race style race on Friday?
Never.
Really?
Never. There's too many of the 4400s. There's some 4800 cars out there that are really fast, but they can't keep up truly because of the single shock requirement.
What's the difference between a 4800 and a 45? Yeah.
48 and 44. The 48 is what they call a Legends class, is what they were calling to begin with. But it's basically an unlimited car, except it's one shock per corner.
Okay,
so you've got coilovers. You don't have the bypasses and coilovers. So you're really limiting the car to what it can do top end. I don't believe that any IFS is allowed in it, even though... You know, a straight axle car almost won it this year, you know, with Randy. And
okay.
Second place was a straight axle car.
Is it true that a straight axle car, or I'm sorry, an IFS has only won it twice? Wow.
No.
No?
No. Shannon's been on IFS all except for 1 year.
Okay, well, he's won it. So is he the only guy that's won it on IFS until this year?
No, Lauren, I don't know. No, I think that Jason's last win was in IFS. I don't know. You know, that's a good question. That's me not paying enough attention to what's going on at Ultra 4.
Okay, so then that's my question. Is there are we close to an IFS and a straight axle class division?
No.
No, won't happen.
No. I don't think so. You know, like I said, Randy was running with, I mean, Jason passed Randy at Backdoor, and then Randy's car, he would have at least had second place. Maybe on corrected time, even first, if he could have stayed on his bumper.
Yeah.
And then Eric Miller was second with a straight axle car. The rest were IFS, but you know, you got two extremely good teams that are still running straight axle. And unless those guys change, and I don't think they will, because there's a certain amount of pride in staying the straight axle. There's places where the straight axle car outshines in the rocks. The guys with the IFS cars have to keep the RPMs up and have to kind of bash through things. So that, attrition wise, that can really take out a lot of moving parts,
So explain to me, and I know we want to get off King of the Hammers.
No, it's all good.
But you have so much exciting stuff going on. We need to get to that. And this is in the past done and over with. But because I am ignorant to the ways of the rock, tell me what's going on. So last year, I was amazed to see how prevalent the tire balls and all that stuff was. So for those of you guys that don't know, these guys are filling their tires up with this product called tire balls, and then there's other products that are similar, but it's basically these foam balls, right, or plastic balls.
They look like breast implants.
Okay. And they go and they fill the tire up with this, and then you can actually fine tune it with a little bit of air, right?
Yes.
Okay. So, but these guys basically can't get a flat unless the tire will no longer hold
the balls.
The balls, right? So it really is there does not have to be any air in the tire, and they can just keep bashing rocks, and you're blown away by what these guys will hit when they do this. Now this year, they said no tire balls. And then somewhere in the whole deal, they went, all right, time out. We're going to let you do tire balls in a certain section of the tire.
In a liner.
In a liner.
They originally, when the whole thing came down, my understanding was they were saying, okay, if there's not going to be anything in the tire, no tire balls, then nothing should be in the tire.
Just air.
Yeah, just air. No, no,
no monster seal, no slime. No,
right. No liners. BFG has mm-hmm. liners. Most of the tire companies have liners, but I think everybody kind of says, BFG seems to have the best. But now they're putting in
Yokohama
a liner that has, balls inside of that.
Okay.
So it looks like a smaller tire inside the bigger tire, and inside that smaller tire are balls.
Okay, and that's okay now.
That's okay.
And what did you see as far as did that experiment work, and did it make for better racing?
I have to say that I left the lake bed at noon because I had to be back here in Arizona for the mm-hmm. next morning. But I don't know what the flat ratios were. I don't know. Not everybody is running tire balls or liners with balls. All the top teams are, because they don't want to be carrying a spare. They don't want to have to change tires.
I was blown away
there by
the amount of guys not carrying a spare.
Right.
Unreal.
In a race like this, if you're changing tires, it's like NASCAR.
Yeah.
You don't have the time. You don't have the luxury.
Right. So,
especially if you're in a single seater.
Unreal.
And you're beating yourself up in the car, and then you get out of the car, and then you have to,
right.
winch yourself right. or whatever. And
Roland McGee said that through one section, and I forget what the name of it was, he winched himself 12 times in one section, and he would winch up, turtle, winch off. Winch up, turtle, winch off. At one point, he took his steering wheel and threw it 150 feet out the window in anger.
Roland, if you're listening to this, you need to start coming out and rock crawling a little bit, because there's UTV drivers that never pulled a winch cable.
Yeah, but they're not on the same course, to be fair, right?
No, the only difference was with the UTVs, they didn't run a third lap.
Oh, is that right?
They ran all the same courses.
Wow.
The 4600s were able to take a bypass.
46 is the Everyman Challenge?
Yeah, that's the stock class, 35-inch under.
35-inch tires?
Yeah.
I didn't know that was a limitation in that
class.
Yeah,
and even like Josh Jackson with the 4608 came in second. I don't think they pulled winch cable, and he finished with front spring missing and the car down on the suspension. The guys that are going fast now, a lot of them have forgotten how to rock crawl, what their roots are.
Yeah.
They're bashing through the lines. They're not thinking about the trail and picking the lines. And a lot of that comes from, you know, being tired, you know, at some point.
So We Rock.
Yes.
And Dirt Riot. Those are your two offerings as far as competition series.
Correct.
We Rock is a rock crawling. If you guys ever get a chance, go to Wheel Travel on YouTube. On the 5-2 Productions, 5-2 Pro, I think is the YouTube channel, and watch the We Rock from Congress. It is unbelievable what these guys are doing, and what's even more incredible is if you've never been to one of these things, come out and spectate it, because you talk about being part of the action. It is unbelievable how close people are, and it's unbelievable how you can talk to the driver. You can hear the driver and his spotter. You can hear the crew members. You can hear the tire on the rock. You can hear all of this stuff, and it's unbelievable, and you have this great appreciation for what's actually going on. Your We Rock events are I think, better than watching that whole deal, because you can see it all from one spot. You have Vendor Row, which is right behind you. And you have this family atmosphere, and you hear crowds cheering over there, and you hear crowds cheering over there, and all you got to do is look to your left or look to your right. It's really phenomenal. I really appreciate, from someone that doesn't come from that, I had no idea what to expect. But how long have you been doing this, and what's the secret?
I started putting on events myself in 2001, November of 2001, with an event called Put Up or Shut Up Shootout, and it was at Lake Amador in Northern California.
That's what I say to Gretchen every night when we go to bed.
Put up or shut up?
Yeah, and every night she shuts up and nothing happens.
Well, sorry. Anyway, since then we've been putting on rock crawls. Now we've 17 years, and we've put on, well, between that and our Dirt Riot races, and then I owned Vora, Valley Off-Road Racing Association, for 4 years. So we did desert racing as well and short course racing at Prairie City. I've put on somewhere between 300 and 350 events. Kind of lost track.
So every time I talk to you, the conversation always starts with, okay, Rich, where are you now? And how many miles do you and Shelley do a year?
Well, during the season, the semi-truck, the Taj Mahaler, gets between 55 and 65,000 a season, depending on how the locations are laid out. The Cherokee, the We Rock Cherokee, our motorized wheelbarrow, gets about another 25 to 30,000 miles, and half of those, I would say, at least half, maybe more, are off-road. And that's, you know, doing recoveries, being out on the at the racetracks, putting, you know, setting courses over and over and over, driving them, doing the recoveries, tearing it down, trail riding, Moab, Jeepers Jamboree, whatever events we happen to be on.
So I'm always amazed at, you know, again, where are you at? What are you guys doing? And whenever I think I'm busy, whenever Josh and I bitch about our schedule, or whenever we say we need a break, then we get online and we see on Facebook, or we see that, oh, you guys are doing this. And then 3 days later, you're on the other side of the country and you're doing something else. And then what I don't think a lot of people understand that do know you is what an enthusiast you are and how prevalent you are in the industry. And now you're going on magazine rides across the country, and then you're going on product development rides going over here. And I mean, it's even when you have a weekend off, you don't have a weekend off.
It's not a job. It's a lifestyle. I walked away from corporate America.
It's not a job. It's a straitjacket.
Yeah, some people would say that. But it's, you know, I have a passion for being outdoors, first of all. And that was from scouting and boating and camping with my parents and, you know, as a kid. And then
I have a passion for indoor plumbing. That's a heater, a blanket, my Whoopee, TV, DVR.
We just get a really nice tent.
I have one. It's that damn fifth wheel out there that has 6 miles on it, and I've had it for 20 years. So
no, it's definitely a lifestyle where things have really improved my life is Shelly coming into it. You know, I tell everybody in 2009.
I said I wasn't going to do this.
Yeah, I know. In 2009, I was absolutely done. I was baked. I was done. I was going to quit. I didn't have any desire to keep doing it. It was a lot of hard work. No reward whatsoever. And I'd met Shelley. She convinced me to let's work together on this instead of just myself. And so she took over the business end of it, the part that I was never really strong in, and saved a sinking ship. I always thought I put on
that would good, be your heart
a good events, the competition part of it, but I never you know, I was not an office guy.
Yeah.
You know, when I was running companies for somebody else, it was different. You know, because, you know, here's the way it's supposed to run. Okay, I can do that.
Right.
But, you know,
here's our system, now follow it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I can do that all day long. If you if it was, you know, okay, Rich, make your own system, well, I took shortcuts. You know, and those shortcuts always caught up to me at the end of the year. Like when you couldn't eat in December, January, February until the season started again. You know, so Shelly has corrected all that. And, you know, a girl that was never really an outdoorsy, especially out wheeling.
Yeah, she comes from the corporate world.
Yes, she does. And all of a sudden, you know, she's living my lifestyle. I mean, I must be one hell of a salesman.
Something. Something. I was going to say Casanova, but let's go with salesman.
Yeah, salesman's yeah. better.
Yeah, no doubt. Well,
If anybody could ever find my old eHarmony profile, you might understand.
For that. I would give $1 million for that. So one time, speaking of eHarmony, Gretchen and I were sitting on the couch, and FarmersOnly.com comes on, and she's like, who in the world would ever call somebody on that? How that doesn't work. They must be getting corporate sponsorship, and who would do that? So she does her normal, it's 8:30, I'm going to doze off on the couch thing, right? So I'm sitting there, and I'm like, all right. So I sign her up. So I put some pictures on there. I put a neat little bio about how much I like guys in tight Wrangler jeans. And you know, while I have to live in the corporate world, I really prefer, you know, sitting cowboy bitch in on a bench seat in a Chevy truck. And lo and behold, she gets up in the morning, and she had 1,100 hits. And
there's a lot of lonely cowboys out there.
I was blown away, and then I realized, well, maybe I've done a bad thing, because now I've shown her that I've been beating her down for so many years, telling her that I was the only one that could love her, that now she found out 1,100 people would actually love her at least for a night. And so it was unbelievable, the response, and she has never let me live that down, and we had more fun with that. But here you are, and it works out.
Do you realize you just ruined 1,100 guys' dream?
Take that. Yes, absolutely. Happy Valentine's Day, mothers. So anyway, yes. But the bottom line is that it does take that something special. It does take that extra person to go, hey, just look at it from where I'm looking at it from, and maybe think of this or maybe think of that. And someone who's not trying to attack but truly trying to help. And then at the same time, if you like traveling around the country with them, life gets pretty good, right?
Yeah, we're together 24/7, 365 days a year. There's rarely any day that we're not together.
Right.
Unless I'm working out on the event site. But, you know, it's, I think in the five years we've been married, there's probably been a week where, you know, all total, where we haven't been together. Where she's gone to visit one of the
don't
daughters.
You think she's due?
I don't think we're going to have any more kids.
No, not do a kid. Do a week off from you.
Oh, if she wants, that's up to her. It's not like I got her chained up in there, you know?
So you've been doing this forever. You've put some serious fire back into it. It's a great family atmosphere.
Yes.
What's next for you? Oh, and by the way, whose brain fart idea was this for you guys to, the guys that don't have enough time to do anything? You bought a magazine last year?
Yeah, we bought a magazine called For Low, and here's the thing. I'm probably going to get in trouble from Shelley because one of the things I'm not really good at is being politically correct. I've had to really temper my thought processes.
Your filter's full?
Yeah. I really have a problem with filtering, but I've learned to do it. To be honest, there was no magazines in the off-road market that I wanted to read. So this magazine came available. We bought it. And what we've created is a magazine that at least I want to read.
Right.
And hopefully there's enough people out there that want to read the same stuff I do. I want to see real editorial. I want to see what other people are doing out there, where they're going, what they're doing. I don't want people to follow me. I don't want to know what all of my friends are doing. I want to know what other people are doing. You know, it's this is a big world here.
So I've been with you on race weekends. I don't for a second pretend to know what goes on during the week. But I go back to Congress, okay? Came out, brought the semi out, okay? Set it up. You were out on trail. Hey, where's Rich? He'll be back. He's, you know, out doing this, out doing that. Go in town. Come back. Hey, I thought you said Rich was going to be back. Oh, well, the permit guy came by. He had to go. He's taking him over here. He's showing him something. Okay, he'll be back. Come back a little bit later. Or hang out for an hour. Work in the trailer. Do whatever. Where's Rich? Well, he's on the backside. They had, you know, a running stream. They had to go around the other thing. I've seen what happens during the week. How are you doing this? And then... I need to remind you that your friggin' address changes every 5 days?
Yeah, but luckily I have really good friends like yourself that, you know, we can, when we have an extra couple of days, we can pull up or we know we're going to be there so we can have things shipped to you guys.
Yeah, but how do you get a magazine out and printed when sometimes you don't know where you're going to be tomorrow?
What's that thing sitting in front of you?
I don't know. I've been told that this is a computer.
Okay.
It's my porn box. That's about it. I don't know.
The whole thing is that Shelley is an amazing person. I'm going to go back to this again and again and again. She's amazing. It may be what I want to see, okay, in a magazine. When it's almost ready to go to the printer, I get a chance to read it first. So I'm pretty excited about that. And so I get to see what the magazine I want to read. But it's Shelley that puts the whole thing together. She lets me write one or two of the pieces that are in it, the small, short ones. the ones where I only have to put like 20 words together.
Little captions under the picture.
Yeah, exactly. And double syllable words cap exactly. On it. Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, she had a lot of time to spend in the evenings, like between or in the mornings, midnight to 2 o'clock, she had some free space.
Oh yeah.
So we just filled it with the magazine production.
All right. Well, why not? Would you like to buy Trophy Light? Is there any chance of that happening?
Not right at the moment. Shelley has said we can only do one business a year, and we're set for this year because
she bought another business.
Yes, she did.
Some hippie power stuff.
Yeah, it's actually called Healing Hippie. It's an organic skincare product line, a deodorant, lip balm, a skin balm, and what's the other? Is it a suntan lotion or something?
Do hippies know there is a deodorant?
Probably not enough of them.
Not enough of them, for sure.
But the tagline is, be a hippie, don't smell like one.
Okay. Is it really?
Yeah.
That's phenomenal. That's the best ever.
But we're gonna try to put together a men's line that's like, be a beast but don't smell like one, something like that.
Yeah.
You know, maybe.
Yeah.
Or you know, organic but not hippie shit. You know, I don't know. Because you know there ain't a racer out there that's gonna put hippie stuff on.
No, right.
The connotation.
Except for hippie.
Except for hippie.
Right.
Yeah, but I don't know if he buys any of that stuff or not.
I'll tell you, from where I'm standing, he doesn't. How funny is it that I don't even talk to Rob anymore, and we moved out here because of him? So Rob has
right.
Hippie on his
this.
On his team, right? And yeah. That's what made me remember that. But so I'll tell you guys the story real quick. It's actually pretty funny. So we live in the middle of the city in Phoenix, and we have, whenever the Congress race was here, we had all of the Utah contingent who were all on KC Lights, and I worked with all these guys, and they were all staying at the house. So we would go out and play with lights, and then we'd go to sleep, and then we'd go out and qualify.
Just so you know, you do know that this is on, like, episode 1, episode 3.
This story is?
Episode 6.
I have 6 stories. I'm getting old. Really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So this is the story where Hippie drives Rob's race car off the trailer, and it bottoms out on the trailer, and to make room for the tent. And when I tell him no tent sleeping in my front yard,
as long as it was on, it wasn't in the front yard. It was on
the trailer. Right. I guess I should have been clear.
On the trailer in the street.
And, yeah. And then they left, and then they said, "Fine, we'll take the trailer down." And he slept on an air mattress with no tent over him in the street on a trailer in my front yard.
For the record.
No, they didn't.
Well, they did.
No, they didn't.
You said no tent sleeping.
And I wish they wouldn't have followed the instructions to my house. So we move out here to where we have all this room, and they can drive out here at any time at night, and I don't even talk to them anymore. How funny is that? Anyway.
Well, Rob's married now, too.
Yeah.
So Wild Man is to an absolutely phenomenal girl by the name of Shelby.
Who's got a short leash on said captain.
Well, good, he needs it.
Yeah, he needs a short,
you know,
leash.
And then Rollins,
he needs an electrical
Rollins engaged,
prod,
I think. And, you know, I mean, that whole group is all getting tied down
not,
and stuff.
Not yet. I don't think it's officially happened yet, has
oh,
it?
Oh, okay. I don't know. I just see all the lovebird stuff seems to be happening on Facebook.
Oh, God. Blah. Between Chad and his wife and Rollins and Rob and and you and Shelly and Jesus Christ.
And you and Gretchen.
All right. So anyway. So you have a magazine. You have a Hippie line. You have We Rock. And We Rock is the rock crawl stuff. And then you have Dirt Riot.
Dirt Riot, yes.
And Dirt Riot is a desert racer meets rock crawler.
Correct. It's all four-wheel drive. We have 8 classes of vehicles. 2 UTV, and then 6
has
cars.
To be four-wheel drive.
Has to be four-wheel drive.
Okay.
To be in the Dirt Riot series of things.
Okay.
The whole idea is to give guys the opportunity to race budget-wise. They get most of the entry fee goes back to the racer at some point in the pro classes. It's 100% of their entry fee goes into the purse.
Wow.
If in the sportsman, it's 50% goes into the purse. So, you know, it's it works really well. We do 4 to 7, 8 mile courses with spectator viewing areas. So our goal is to get spectators to come pay for it instead of the drivers.
Yep.
And it's working for us. It trains drivers how to race. It gives them an opportunity to meet other people that are like-minded. So when they do step up and go to Ultra 4 or King of the Hammers, they're not there by themselves, and they have an idea of what it might take to succeed at a race like that.
Gotcha.
A few years ago, there was a race where there was 23 finishers, I think it was, and like 17 of them had a lot of seat time or were Dirt Riot racers before they became Ultra 4 racers.
How does one get started if they've never done this? And first of all, how do they decide which way? Do they go left and go We Rock, or do they go right and go Dirt Riot?
You know, it all depends on, you know, the person's vehicle, first of all. Most of them start off in trail rigs. So they're basically rock crawlers, and they'll...
And by that, you mean something that started as a production unit. I've seen Toyota trucks out there. I've seen Land Cruisers.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen Jeeps. I've seen all sorts of
Land
stuff.
Land Rovers.
Land Rovers. Even, Chevy pickup trucks or
yes.
whatever that have been converted over to these rock crawler deals that some are even street legal. They drove there. They hope to drive home. And they go out. And so, I mean, there really is a production inexpensive way to get started in this.
Correct. You got to have cage, harnesses, at least a DOT helmet, two fire extinguishers, and you can come out and race.
That's amazing. There's 1,000 vehicles within a 100-mile radius of here that would fit into that, and they probably don't know that.
Well, and they may know it, but it takes a certain kind of person to go out and push themselves in a competition. You know, not everybody's made for competition. Some people love to, go, hey, I'm a better trail wheeler than you. I just did that obstacle better than you, but they don't want somebody judging them doing it. They don't want to go between the cones. They don't want to have the clock running on them and, go bumper to bumper with somebody at speed.
Sure.
So
sure.
It's
not for everybody.
Competition's not for everybody, but there's enough alpha personalities to keep us busy.
So they decide that they want to come out and they want to play with you. How do they get a hold of you?
The internet, social media.
We rock.
Call me. The great thing, landlines, are a thing of the past.
Yeah.
Cell phones. I'm probably the easily... anybody can get hold of me. I mean, I'm way overexposed probably.
So where would they... Is there a We Rock website? That's hard to say, We Rock website.
If you haven't said it a lot, it can be a tongue twister.
Yeah, I bet.
We Rock Live is the name of the website, werocklive.com, and then dirtriot.com, and Facebook pages, user groups, driver pages, all that kind of stuff. That everything leads to us.
So what's new for 2018?
Well, we're taking over the Delta, what was called Old School Rock Crawl in Delta,
I've been
Utah.
To that event. It's awesome.
Yes. It's Party Rock.
Yes.
We changed the name to Delta Classic Rock Crawl, and we're adding in a winch challenge besides what's been there before.
That, by the way, that was...
King of the Whisks is going to be there.
I am... undefeated in my racing career at Delta in a UTV.
Really?
Undefeated.
Very nice.
I've raced once, I won once, and that's it.
Kurt LeDuc did that in rock crawling.
Did he really?
Yeah, he came out one event in Pennsylvania, won it, and then he had a Campbell chassis he was going to build, and he never finished it because he was like, I'm 100%. Why?
Yeah, why ruin that?
Yeah, why ruin that percentage?
And you are 100%, right? You got the win in your first deal, right?
Yes.
Technically?
Oh, at Congress, that's right.
We're never coming back.
No, Tucson.
Tucson.
Oh, it was Tucson, that's right. Yeah, Tucson.
Yeah, the day before, you said, if you go get it, you can race it. So I drove 3 hours back home and 3 hours back and grabbed the Razor.
That's right. Roland helped you prep it and put gas in it, check the tire pressure and drive it.
And the tech inspector turned his head the other way.
Yes.
But that's okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
But we had a blast. That's the point.
That's the
whole
idea.
We were able to come out and we were competitive in a stock, totally stock car.
Yes.
With cage and seats and harnesses. And
and are you doing the Tucson event again this year?
Yes.
I want another shot.
At losing? Because I know, but I'm saying you want a shot. That means you want to accomplish a goal you haven't accomplished yet.
Well, I want to defend my title.
There you go. That's better.
There you go. Perfect.
I like it.
And you know what? Oh, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to bring Brandon out.
Oh, with his 900.
Yeah.
And there you go.
He will race.
He needs window nets. He needs a fire extinguisher.
You do not need a window net.
No, you need window nets or
wrist restraints.
Oh, zip ties.
And we had window, and we put your 1600 car window nets in your car.
We did?
Yes, we did.
Oh, cool. Let's just do that again.
But, okay, so if you do that again, then Brandon won't have window nets. This is what I'm saying. You're going to have to come up with something for him. He's got a job. He can buy his own stuff.
Wait, do zip tie window nets work?
As long as there's a way out, right?
Yeah, as long as there's a way out. I'd rather see, snow fencing. Cut a panel of snow fencing because... if you have to tear it out of the way, you can easily.
Yeah. Right. It does the job of stopping your hand, but you could get out of it if you had to.
Well, that's what we're using in a trophy life from here on out.
Yeah. Yeah. That is what we're
using. Save some weight.
There you go. How about you not eat those Oreo cookies, and then we'll be fine on that. What are you at now? 240?
Yeah.
Jeez Louise. You're a machine. All right. So there's a place for everybody at We Rock and Dirt Riot.
That's correct.
Our deal, because we have a desert racing background, we went the Dirt Riot route, and we had a blast, and we hope to do more this year. And now that we have actual skid plates on the car, I actually don't mind if you go out and you drive the car a little bit off-road. But,
and do you know why you have skid plates on that car?
Because we weren't out of zip ties.
Because
you installed them with zip ties.
Just the front wheels, they're just two holes. There was like 86 of them on that skid plate. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Actually, have you been under that car to check if those bolts are still there?
No.
Oh, you should.
No, you should.
Right. Okay.
All right. Then I better, because you won't. So, anyway, what's new? What else is new for 18?
We're hoping we should be opening up the Dirt Riot Northeast and Southeast. So we'll have scheduled 25 events this year instead of the 19 we did last year.
How do you do an event? How do you get the permits or get the area or get the, when you're sitting here in Whitman, Arizona for an event? What's your farthest event back east?
New Hampshire, Warren, New Hampshire.
Are you kidding me? What is the matter with you? Is it really?
It is. It is.
How do you find racers? How do you find... And I know the internet helps, and I know that... But how do you do this so far away? I can't put an event on in my backyard, let alone in New Hampshire, when you're sitting in Arizona.
We have just a lot of great followers and a lot of great people out there that help us get the word out, talk to their friends.
All right. So I've interrupted you 15 times.
Oh, the other thing we're doing... We're bringing We Rock to television this year.
What?
We're shooting our own television show. Right now, the working title is Rock Gods. And that's
Rock
with the
Gods.
Rock Gods, yep. And that's a lowercase g for those that it matters.
Oh.
Okay.
Politically correct.
Yes.
Or is that, politically incorrect because people feel that God should be capital?
Well... That God, yes, but the rock gods don't need to be capitalized.
How about you do it like the Jewish people do? Yeah, G-A-W-D, God.
Yeah, hey, well,
rock God. We're from New Hampshire.
If we get a lot of pushback, that might happen. But you know, it's probably going to be what it is.
How about rock? Go screw yourself if you don't like it.
Exactly.
How about that?
Yeah, don't watch.
Yeah, exactly.
But we're gonna shoot the show. 10 episodes. There's 9 events, but we'll have the finals will be 2 episodes is what we're looking at. And,
really?
And it'll be, we're shooting for Amazon Prime or Netflix. We've been trying for like 14, 15 years to get onto regular TV, and regular TV is all obsessed with this, with what I call bullshit TV, with fakeality stuff, all make-believe, you know, fake competitions, scripted, you know, they just... It's not real. I like to think of what we're trying to do is like Deadliest Catch on the Rocks, you know, where we tell a story, we talk about the drivers, why they're there, what they have to go through to be there, and then show the competition, those guys on the rocks. It's not going to be like one of the, you know, Lucas Oil type races where they're showing, you know, the results and here's the, you know, the trophy, you know, whatever they are, Pro 4, Pro 2, or whatever, heat races, none of that kind of stuff. It won't show everybody's, all their runs and stuff. It'll be highlights. But, you know, the scoring and where people end up is not the story so much as the story on how they get there.
How they get there.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And what pays for it and what doesn't happen when they do pay for it, because this is what they've selected to do with their money. And
correct.
I mean, there's so many great stories out there that most people don't realize that go on in this. And it's like any hobby that people are fanatic about, you know, it's, but it is the best and worst drug I've ever been involved with, you know, this racing thing. And, but you give the opportunity to go camping with your family, or even if you have the opportunity to, and you have the budget to hotel it, or if you have the luxury of an RV or whatever, but lock yourself in your UTV or RV, excuse me. Lock yourself in your hotel room. Lock yourself in your car. Travel 500 miles with your family. Get to know one another again. Put the goddamn cell phones away. Put the iPads away.
This sounds like an awful trip.
And find out who little Jimmy's dating now, you know, and or find out why, you know, little Cindy is not working on her math homework or whatever, and get involved in your family and do something like this. This is an unbelievable way. It gives you the opportunity to give your kids goals, show them what happens when you work hard, show you what happens when you work hard. And I guarantee you, when you go to work Monday, you're happier because you realize that you're doing the Monday monotony because of what you love to do on the weekends.
Correct. I was brought up that way. I mean, we were camping every weekend. We were snow skiing or water skiing. We were always doing something. My dad had two jobs during the week most of the time I was growing up. My mom worked. You know, I was what they called a latchkey kid then. You know, we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have computers. We went to the park and played. We rode our bikes. Anybody in the neighborhood could correct you if you were being a little shit.
How about that?
You know, yeah. I mean, you can't even correct your own kids now.
No,
without, you
that's
know,
fact. That's
and,
fact.
And that's one of the things, you know. Look at, they're taking away the, up in, you know, Washington or wherever it was, you know, they're taking away the soccer ball and they're playing soccer without a ball. Okay. No, they got rid of the scoring 1 year. Now they're taking away the ball. So
you want to know what an asshole I am? So here's Josh playing YMCA basketball where they don't keep score, which is the biggest crock
and
of shit on the planet.
Keeping score.
So much worse than that. So one of the dads would sit on one side of the gym and I'd sit on the other side of the gym. And as soon as our team would score, we'd go 6-0, Joey. And he'd go, that's right, 6-0. And then their team would score and he'd go 6-2 now, Jason. And I go, that's right, Joey, 6-2. And we, and people are looking at us like, we don't keep score. And we're like, oh yeah, we do. It's 6-2. You know, how is a kid going to know that if he works harder, he will get a win or he will get a basket or he will get a point? What if we're all the same and everybody's equal? How are we going to have a boss? How are we going to have someone to pull the shovel? How are we going to have, you know, it's okay. It's okay if we have classes, if we have different levels. Not everybody is meant for college. Not everybody is meant to be an executive in real estate or in financing or whatever. Not everybody is supposed to be able to run this goddamn country. It's okay. We don't need Oprah running the country. We don't need celebrity stars running the country. We need good businessmen who have an education. And that it's okay if that's not you. Find your place and work your ass off.
But if you don't know how to lose, you will never win.
You'll never win.
Correct.
That's a fact. That's absolutely true. And truer words have never been spoken. And I appreciate that.
Caught kids nowadays are coddled too much. They're, you know, I don't know if it's all what has to do with, you know, electronics and them staying in the house too much, or if it's just the, you know, the generation, my generation or the generation just leading before that or just after it that are having the kids nowadays that want to make things so much easier for their kids than what they had it. You know, every generation, we always want to, you know, we want to make it easier on our kids than what we had it. But now, you know, our kids are going, my house, you know, they move out. They want their house, their rental, whatever it is, to be as good as what their parents have, that their parents have worked 20, 30 years for, and they want it instantly overnight because they're used to playing games that give them instant gratification.
Sure.
And they're not out there busting their ass for it on the basketball court or in the park playing tag or just pick up baseball or football. You know, it's now, you know, hey, we were playing soccer without a ball.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
right.
you
no,
know,
you're right.
let's go play patty cake all the time.
Well, and the overstimulation, I mean, these people have their nose in something 24/7. Our imagination is going to suffer because of this, because the imagination is happening for us on our phone, on our the internet, on whatever.
Augmented reality on all the stuff you're seeing now in ads and everything else.
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, and we don't have, you know, now you can't form an opinion on your own because you're evil if you have an opinion.
Oh, yeah.
And you're, you know, you can't possibly call anybody out on anything. That's the biggest crock of shit, and it's going to kill this country. And you know what? I feel strongly about it. And the fact of the matter is we don't have to be, you know, xenophobes, homophobes, racists. We don't have to be whatever, but it's still okay to have an opinion. It's still okay to feel afraid in certain neighborhoods. It's still okay to keep score at basketball games. It's still okay to tell someone when he's doing it wrong. And I'm not a big fan of spanking my kid. I've done it once in his life. And I guarantee him that it hurt me more than it hurt him. And the fact of the matter is he deserved it. And I stuck to my word. And when he did whatever he did to deserve it, I did it. And I am proud of it. And I'm, because I said I was going to do it, and I did it.
There's a difference between discipline and, you know, a full-out beating. You know, I don't think that a correction and a swat on the butt or four or five of them or whatever is the same. You know, that's not child abuse.
Right.
You know, that I think telling your child, oh, go sit in the corner, you know, or we're going to take away your cell phone.
Right.
That's child abuse.
Right. That's fact.
That's bullshit.
That's a fact. I couldn't agree with you more. And more parents need to think that way. And you know, I hate to sound like, you know, like old man Cobb, but you know, the fact of the matter is I do remember when it was a punishment to come in the house, you know, instead of I'm going to send you guys outside if you don't behave. Right.
Our curfew was when the lights came on the street lights, you know, of course there were some places I lived where we didn't have street lights,
right, yeah.
But I mean, when it got too dark where you couldn't see, that's when you needed to head home.
Well, you know, I have a young man that has a work ethic because he knew that if he wanted something, he was going to have to earn it. Our motto, our family motto is, Josh?
Dessert first.
Yeah. Oh, you always eat dessert first because you never know when somebody's going to pull the fire alarm.
Oh, I never thought about that.
All right. I found my new life motto. We can be done. We work before we play.
We work before we play. And that's absolute. We've lived by that. And that's why we are where we are today. And that's why we can go. We can't afford to go off-road racing. We couldn't do it without amazing partners like Rugged Radios and Ultra Wheels and Yokohama and everybody, Monster Seal and everybody that has been so phenomenal to us, Traco Fasteners and you know, and now that I'm on the spot, I'm forgetting everybody. But you know, we couldn't do this without them. And we appreciate everything, but we also work our ass off for those people. And we make
Absolutely.
Sure that we're not done at the end of the day. We've got to go over and make sure that they're done as well, you know. And, you know, PRP Seats is a perfect example. These guys come out when they come to the Arizona shows and they've stayed with us. We've set up their booth when they couldn't get there. They've had stuff shipped here. You know, they have...
We've had ping pong tournaments.
We've had amazing ping pong tournaments.
3 a.m.
And then decided that it was the right idea to go out in UTV and at 3 a.m. And, you know, I mean, so that's how you build relationships. That's how you build fun. Lance and Steve and Greg and everybody at Rugged. I mean, same thing. They've left trailers here. We've gone up to them and leaned on them. You know, we've developed, you know, we've given them feedback on products that they want tested. They make sure that we have the communications that we need to do what we need to do. That's how these partnerships work.
Correct. And you just used the right term, partnership.
Partnership.
It's a marketing partnership. You're both working to the good of both of you, not just to one of you.
Well, it can't be. And there are so many people that take, And there are so many people, and I'm sure at times it feels to any one of our sponsors that we take. And then at the end of the day, they're like, damn, I'm glad we got involved in that because they gave.
That's why I don't use the term sponsor.
Sponsor. That's right.
Because the sponsorship is somebody gives you something, that you put a sticker on your vehicle or whatever, you hang their banner, and then you never communicate with them. You don't really care as long as you got what you needed.
Sure.
A partnership, it's like that, you know, the dirt and the tree and the rain and, you know, everything together so that you can grow.
Yep, absolutely. And speaking of growing, you are growing. You're doing a hell of a job with your series. You're blowing it. Every year is better than the last. And you have some amazing, exciting things coming. Absolutely blessed to have you as a friend and a dear friend. And we're working on some things together. And, you know, nothing's happening at the rate in which any of us want. But none of us have any idea what's around the next corner for any of us. So, but just so tickled to death of any opportunity I have to spend with you. And I love it when you're here and we get upset when you leave, you know, so.
And I'm sorry we've been here all week and this is the first time we've really gotten a chance to get together.
I know. Get your packages out of my living room. No, you know what? We wouldn't do it any other way. Cause
we love Vinny.
And Vinny loves you and not everybody. Vinny is very select on who he is partial to, and he is partial to you guys for sure. And, but what a great role model you guys are for my son, for me, for us. I absolutely in awe of the things you guys do and your work ethic and your attitude and how positive you are on this industry. And on behalf of the industry, if I can speak for the industry, thank you, you know, for everything that you do. And you do it right.
Well, thank you. That means a lot. You know, that's like I said, it all comes out of a passion and a love for the people that are in the industry and the industry itself.
Yeah, for sure. It shows, man. You got a killer passion. And boy, you did hit the jackpot with Shelly.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we're both very, very blessed. And, you know, it was neat to see you guys after all these years. You went on your date night the other night, and that was cool. And,
oh, yeah.
And, you know, I still we're going on our date weekend, I think, tomorrow. We're going to go do some traveling around. And do some things, but you have to do those things. You got to remind yourself, you know, what's important in this deal and why we do all this, right?
It's always family first.
Family first. That's right. No, it's we work before we play, Rich. That's the way we do it here. So.
No. Eat your dessert first because you never know when someone's going to pull
the fire alarm. Yeah, there you go. And I was going to say, because you don't know if you're going to get full too fast, and then I realized nobody in this room is getting full too fast. So.
And that's the nice thing about ice cream. Because it melts and fills in all the little crevices.
Yeah, that's a fact. That's a fact. So what's coming up? What's your first event of the year?
We're in Baghdad, California. All roads lead to Baghdad.
Seriously, California?
No, California. Jeez, Arizona.
Okay, I was going to say, because there's a Baghdad, Arizona, too, and I thought you were doing it there. But
yeah, we are. Baghdad, Arizona. I don't know why I said California.
Okay.
I haven't spent much time in my home state in a long time.
Understood.
It's no longer my home state. Baghdad, Arizona, it's March 3rd and 4th.
Nice.
And we're right in town.
No way, really?
Oh, yeah. The Copper Country Bar and Grill are within like 300 yards.
Wow. That sounds awesome.
Yeah. And we'd be doing Tech and Reg there and a car show. With all the competitors and stuff and any of the locals that want to get involved in it on Friday. That'll start at 4:00 in the afternoon. And there's a band for Saturday night. And we got a DJ for Saturday or for Friday night there at the Copper Country Bar and Grill. And it's going to be a heck of a good time. And new rocks. Nobody's seen them. Nobody's been on them. Nobody has. Nobody's ever driven on these rocks. I guarantee it.
Very cool.
It's really nice to get into a new site. We hated losing Thompson's Ranch in Congress, but you know, things like that happen, and so we're up in Baghdad, and we're really excited about it.
Nice, very cool.
Yeah.
And then what's coming up in your world, Josh?
Mint 400. Mint. We got the Mint, and we're gonna have hopefully 20 trucks. Rumor
has it that somebody talked to Donald, and he said we have 19 already.
19 already, 19 and we're not even to the drawing yet.
Nope.
Wow, that's pretty good. And that would be a record, an all-time record.
Yep, that would be an all-time record for most amount of Trophy Light entries ever.
Very cool.
In the, what is it, 10 years now?
Yeah, we're 07 to 7. Well, we're in the 11th season.
So 11?
So, yeah. Well, cool.
That's
well,
awesome.
Yeah, so we're, you know, everything's going well. And we're trying to find out a time next year that we can bring them your way and find a way to put on a show or maybe even this year. So we'll see what happens. But anyway, I'm just delighted to have you here. We need to have you on more. And good luck to you in this coming season.
All right. Thank you, Jason.
All right. All right, so that wraps it up. We will talk to you soon as we try to get back on schedule with Wheel Travel, the podcast. And for Vinny, for Shelley, for Gretchen, for Big Rich and Josh, I am Jason Cobb at the Cobb Pound, signing off for now. Wheel Travel 17, B-B-B-B-B-B.